Today, we're going to discuss the power of adding on. And the power of adding on is more than just the financial impact. It's getting your sales teams accustomed to recommending the appropriate items that go along with any given sale. We're going to discuss an American Express case study. And most importantly, we're going to discuss what items are actually not considered add-ons, but rather part of the sale itself.
Welcome back, everyone. Today, we're going to talk about the power of adding on to the sale. And it may not be always obvious when something is actually being added on to a sale. And I wanted to bring in Harry Freeman to talk about a couple of things. One, the importance of adding on, but two, some examples of industries at which add-on selling is occurring, but you may not always realize it. And it's not always in the traditional retail setting. So Harry, welcome back. Thanks for joining us.
Justin, so happy to be here.
I'm glad you're here too. So talk to us. talk to us about adding on.
Okay. I do love this subject very, very, very much. First of all, let's talk about the financial impact of adding on, because that's where it all really starts. So let's say I set up a retail store. And I sell products, of course, or I'm a dentist, right? Or it doesn't really matter the business. Lots of businesses have logical things that, you know, this goes with that peanut butter. My goodness, goes with jelly. There are certain things like that. But let's take a look at the financial implication first. When you sell, let's talk about a tennis racket, okay? For, I don't know why, I just picked a tennis racket. So I'm a store that sells all sorts of sporting goods stuff, and I sell a tennis racket. Well, there's a cost associated with the tennis racket. There is not only the cost of goods, COG, cost of goods, and let's say the tennis racket sells for $100, and the tennis racket cost me $50. I'm just make simple mathematical numbers here. So what I have is a $50 or 50% margin, okay? That's not profit. It's gross profit, but it's not. It's just margin. With the $50 remaining, with that $50 that I have as gross profit, I have to pay for the rent of the store, advertising, labor, all the main office personnel, warehouse, all this stuff that I have to pay for when I sell the tennis racket. And I might only make 10%. A lot of people would love to make 10%. 10% of the gross margin. So I have $50. I might make $5 or $10 on the gross, depending on how you take a look at it. But it's a very, very small amount that's left over for profit when you consider all the expenses. Now, when I sell that tennis racket, I've taken out all the expenses to make this sale. If I were to add on a cover or, let's get real crazy and add on tennis balls, which makes no sense at all. That's mm-hmm. not an add-on, and mm-hmm. I'll talk to you about that. I'll talk to you about that a little bit later on. Let's talk about a carrying case. That's a little bit more deluxe. And let's say the carrying case is $40. Well, the cost of the carrying case on the $40, let's just keystone and call it $20. Now, the question is, do I take out the expenses as I did on the tennis racket on the second item? And the answer is no. You only take it out, you know, psychologically, you take it out once every transaction. So in a sense, gross profit equals net profit when you add on additional merchandise. So all the real money that's made in the sale is on the additional items that you add to the sale. So that's kind of interesting. You would never get the accounting department to agree to any of this, as they're not necessarily thinking the way we think. But if you really look at what I just said, you'll see that add-ons are essential in any company's ability to grow. So gross profit equals net profit. Add-ons are absolutely essential. And now let's talk about what an add-on is, because I think there's a lot of misunderstandings in the world of adding on. Justin, we didn't talk about this before, but I'm going to give you an exam right now.
Okay.
If I'm in a men's clothing store and I'm buying a brand new suit, what's the add-on?
A tie.
Just a tie?
A shirt.
Shirt and tie.
Shirt and tie. There we go.
Yeah, of course. Now, I'd like to share this with you because you're a nice young man and you need to know things. 90% of all the guys that buy a brand new suit, oh boy, 90% of the guys that buy a new suit buy a shirt and tie to go along with it. Is it an add-on or is it the suit?
Sounds like it's just part of the purchase.
It is.
It's just part of the suit.
It is the suit. Yeah. And so we have this ridiculous thought that certain add-ons are more than what they are. Like, for example, if you're going to buy a tennis racket, you would buy tennis balls. You would want brand new tennis balls. I don't believe that's an add-on at all. I believe that if you're going to play tennis, you should have tennis balls, and it's part of the mix. It's just absolutely part of it. The psychology of all this is all those things that are essential are not really add-ons. They're what I call must-haves. So if you buy some electronic item that requires batteries, or batteries an add-on? Why would we even think it's an add-on? You need the batteries to operate the thing. That makes no sense that we look at it in terms of an add-on. Add-ons can be, should be, and should be thought of as important items that complete a transaction. So if I buy a gorgeous tennis racket for $100 to not have a cover for it, puts the tennis racket at risk, right? It needs to be protected. When you talk about a beautiful pair of shoes that perfectly match your suit, you're completing your outfit. I mean, can you imagine buying a brand new suit, shirt, tie, and have ugly shoes? It completes the outfit. And shoes are a significant additional part of the purchase as opposed to the shirt and tie.
So you're blowing my mind right now, and I'm trying to think about every industry or environment that I've been in where I would have assumed this is an add-on, but it's actually not. It's just part of what I was going in there to get anyway.
Yeah, of course. And if salespeople are sloppy about the presentation of this add-on, then it becomes nattering, and they're like, you know, pecking at you. All the must-have add-ons really should be part of the demonstration and not looked at as some sort of, you know, and you need this and you need this and you need that. It doesn't make any sense. So if I grab this electronic item that requires a battery, I just grab the batteries as part of the demonstration and say something simple like, I personally recommend these batteries to go with this unit. Who would argue with that? I personally recommend, you know, these are kind of things that are just really simple. I'll give you an interesting story. I went to buy a car a couple of years ago, and when you're in the finance department, I actually leased the car. And in the finance department, these guys are responsible for the extended warranties and the low jack, which is the, you know, homing device for a stolen car and all that. And to me, it's always been nattering. There's these little, I have in my head what the price of the car is. I have in my head what the monthly payment is. And all of a sudden, this guy wants to add on all these little dinky things. And I've always thought that extended warranties should be talked about by the salesperson, at least peripherally, to set up this environment. In the end, I'm not a big fan of certain kinds of warranties, so I didn't want the low jack. If someone stole my car, I would feel so violated, you could have it, right? You know what I mean? I don't want it back. It's just my personal thing. Some people, you know, want their car back, certainly if it's a classic or something like that, but in any event. And since it was a lease, I didn't need an extended warranty beyond the 3 years of the lease. But he said, I would recommend a warranty on your tires and wheels. And I went, well, that just sounds like, I don't know. So I said, no. I did the transaction. We wrote the contract. I signed it. I'm about out the door. And I decided on my own to turn back and say to the finance guy, was there anything I missed in this transaction? And he said, yes. And I said, what's that? He says, I completely disagree with you with the tire and the wheel warranty. And I said, come on, it's a bunch of money. He says, yeah, but you're failing to really appreciate a couple things. First of all, the tires on the car are performance tires, and they cannot be repaired. So they have to be replaced. So you can't fix these tires. So if you get this wild puncture, which is not such an unusual idea after 3 years, right? Right. You're going to have to buy a new tire. And he says, look, you don't think about the cost of a wheel. These are fancy wheels, blah, 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 blah. And let me just tell you the cost of a wheel that's not covered by warranty. That's a big exposure. And frankly, you're making a decision between $6 a month, which you won't even think about, and thousands of dollars if this stuff goes wrong. Anyway, I walked back and he was happy, you know, which I appreciate, to rip up the contract and do a new one. And I bought the, and you know the story. I was on my way to, we at the time we had a training center in Las Vegas, and I was driving there and I got a flat tire.
Of course.
You just gotta love it.
Of course.
And the car had to be towed, right? Because you can't just, and the tire had to be replaced, and the tire itself was very expensive. And I was very, very thankful. There's all sorts of little things that make sense to go along with this, that, and the other. And there's a couple things historically about add-ons that I just need to share with you. First of all, if a customer walks into a store and they say they want to spend $600 on mm-hmm. something, and and that's all they have, I only have $600, it's the only amount of money I have, and you show them something for $600, what's your likelihood that you're going to add on to that? Well, they got you over a barrel. Psychologically, they're saying, well, you know, I'm at my max, and the salesperson is afraid to add on to that, don't you think? I mean, that puts the salesperson in a rough situation. So let's talk about this, for example. If I'm selling a bicycle and the guy says, I want to spend $800, the salesperson shows him something for $900, which is $100 over the guy's budget, and the guy says, all right, what's the chance that the salesperson's going to add on? Well, not very likely. But the question I have for you is this. Does the $900 that he's spending on the bicycle have anything to do with the fact that he needs a helmet?
No.
Does it have anything to do with the fact that he needs a pump to pump up the tires?
No.
No, I mean, and so this guy's backing off all this, and they're so logical to me. They're so logical to me. Let's take women, for example, and I say this with all due respect. I mean, a woman who buys a brand new outfit, a clothing outfit, I mean, this has nothing to do with her shoes or her handbag budget. Right? Yeah. They're not to be confused. I mean, a woman's shoe budget is a separate, you know, sanctimonious line item that has nothing to do with her handbag budget, which has nothing to do with her clothing budget. And yet we confuse these things all the time. Mm-hmm. So just even without any technique of how to add on better, psychologically, we already know that we're making mistakes when we confuse value or budget or limitations that are self-imposed by the salesperson.
So, Harry, just to recap on some of the things you've touched on, what can a retailer do? Because obviously adding on is part of salesmanship and is part of the training program for any good retailer, any good small business or big business, it doesn't matter. But using the examples you said, how would a business who's listening to this right now identify within their business the items that are just the no-brainers that they may have traditionally thought were an add-on? Like, hey, I'm winning, we're adding on this. But the fact of the matter is, that's part of the normal purchasing process.
Well, you don't need me to identify it. Every business knows what the logical additional items are. I think we start, it's certainly great for rookies and those people who choose not to go the extra mile, but there's nothing wrong with highlighting 4 or 5 items a week in the packages that we'd like to see sold. And you could create a name, you could call it a bingo, you could call it whatever you want, a home run or grand slam. And there could be little acknowledgments to people that sell these things. I've always believed that contests, games, incentives, things like that on new behaviors or behaviors that you really want to highlight are such a great idea. If somebody got something every time they sold a bingo, you know what I mean by a bingo? That's the tennis racket with the balls and the protective covers. There should be some recognition. Cute story, years and years and years ago, I mean a long time ago, I'm sure maybe it's 25 years ago, I can't remember. In the Philippines, the wife of the great dictator, his name was Imelda Marcos, and she was famous. You're a little too young, but there was in all the newspapers showed photographs. She got busted with 2,000 pairs of shoes in her closet. And so she had a little shoe thing going on, you know, a little shoe fetish. In any event, I was working with a chain of shoe stores at the time, and we decided to have the Imelda Marcos Cup. And it was a matter of how many items per sales transaction, and an item being a pair of shoes. So we had this ridiculous contest, and we put her picture up and the picture of the closet with all the shoes. And we talked about all the people that were shoe fanatics and all this. And anyway, the end result was that we increased the average sale by a ridiculous amount. But that's fine. And we gave the money away, and all that was great. But where it settled in, right after the contest was over, was a significantly higher average sale or items per sale than prior to the contest. So we just incentivized people. We made fun out of the whole process. People got used to it. And that's one of the ways that retailers can start getting people to add on the logical amount of the logical sequential items. Look, it's a matter of belief and core values. Does the company believe that this goes with that? Does the company believe that? There's all these things that make sense. It's a matter of courage and salespeople knowing that this is their responsibility.
Well, awesome, Harry. I do have one question because I've been thinking about all these profound things you're throwing my way. Why is, in your example of the bike, why is the bike pump not the logical, a logical purchase with a bike? That would be considered an add-on in that specific example?
It depends on the price of the pump.
Oh, gotcha.
But I actually would never think of that as an add-on. I would always think of that as just part of the requirements to ride a bicycle. You need a helmet. You need a pump. Mm-hmm. You need those. Those are requirements to just get out and go riding. Where it gets fun is integrating things like a computer so that you can track the amount of miles that you do, your average riding speed. And some of them are so sophisticated today. As you know, I'm a bicycle fanatic, and I have a computer for my bicycle that has GPS on it. My God, it's unbelievable. It gives me directions if I get lost. It gives me my heart rate and average speed, and it's a wonderful tool that I utilize every time I go riding to not only give me information on my riding, but it also makes my ride more enjoyable. I stare at it all the time. There's not a bicycle guy in the world that has one of these computers that would ever give it up. It's that important. That's an add-on to me. I mean, that's something really special.
Yeah, it's actually kind of funny you mentioned that example. I also ride. I haven't ridden in a while, but I'd like to consider myself a rider. And it's actually kind of funny. I was in the bike shop getting some tubes for my bike, and I'm listening to the sales rep. This is a local place in San Diego. And this guy's talking about, you know, one of the Garmin's 550, 650. I can't remember what it was. And the guy at the counter is saying, well, you know, your phone does all this. All the stuff you're talking about, you can just download a free app and you can just use your phone. And the guy goes, really? goes, yeah, let me, I could just give you this attachment to your bike and you can use your phone. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, oh, I wish the owner was here listening to this conversation. The guy was so interested. And the guy goes, no, just use your phone. But the reality is that your phone, if you were a serious rider, your phone is not on the front of your bike, right? Like that is not the tool you're using.
They actually have mounts for it.
Oh yeah. Okay. He sold the guy the mount.
But there's some basic truths to, I don't want to get into a whole bunch of detail, but let me answer that question for you. If you were to buy a nice Garmin, as opposed to using an app like Strava or some of these other devices that can be downloaded, I know that, for example, an RPM and speed and all this, that's attached to a magnet on my back wheel, and it's actually physically counting the revolutions and the speed of the revolutions and giving me very, very accurate data on my performance. When you download an app, that is GPS-based. So the GPS is responsible for tracking your speed, but it's not giving you RPMs. So unless there's something mechanically attached to the bike, it is completely an inferior product. So I feel bad that the salesperson didn't really tell the story. How serious of a salesperson was this? Customer was this, and how serious of a rider? Now, I certainly think it's a very cool thing if you're beginning as a rider, as you learn to ride a bicycle and you start to fall in love with the idea of it being one of your activities. Then it's cool because it gives you some data as opposed to no data, and it's cool. Mm-hmm. But the minute you become serious about riding, then you're going to want something that's very accurate and gives you some targets to hit to improve your performance.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you, Harry. Thanks for your insights on adding on. And we will be talking next week for some more interesting conversation.
One more. As always, I have one final thought.
Oh,
it's my Columbo moment. One more thing. There was a study done in the Midwest, and I think at the time it was sponsored by American Express. And then the University of Michigan did one also, and they were talking about who quits first. So what they found, without even a doubt, that salespeople quit selling way in advance of customers who quit buying. So American Express did a thing where they gave some of the students American Express gold cards, and they sent them into retail stores, and they said, well, if a salesperson suggests you buy this additional item, just buy it. You have no limit. Just buy it. And if they sell you an additional item and then they suggest something else, you just buy it. Just say yes to everything. And so the result was of five people, one person bought three items, one bought two, and three bought one. And there was no limitation on this. So what does this tell us? It tells us that the salespeople stop well in advance of the customer. The University of Michigan was interesting. They gave a whole bunch of kids a $100 bill and said, go shopping in the mall. And anytime someone asks you to buy something, buy it. So the salesperson just actually came out and said, so you want to go for it, or shall I wrap it up, or whatever the closing line was, right? Go for it. And you can spend all of the $100. Mm-hmm. And my question to you, Justin, it was a timed event. My question to you, Justin, how many people came back with change?
All of them.
You are right. Yes. They all came back with change. So this is really kind of interesting. When I do some very advanced training, I look at salespeople dead in the eye and say, at what point do your knees shake? At what point do your knees shake? And this is a little bit about winning, too. There's a little bit about winning. Can you win? Do you have the stomach to win? Do you have the will to win? Do you have the desire to win? Because people just keep quitting way in advance of the finish line. So if someone bought that $800 bicycle we talked about and he spent $900, and we go for the helmet and we go for the pump and the customer says, yeah, what the hell, I'll take it. At what point do you say, all right, let's take it up to the register and wrap this up? Because you're so fearful that the sale is going to get so big that he's going to take nothing that you quit. That's not winning. So as long as a customer, I have an expression, and I think we could leave this podcast off with the thought that you were never hired to say yes or no for a customer. You were always hired to present and let them say yes, let them say no. And until you've heard the words, "That's enough already, stop, you're killing me," until you hear that, it's your job. You're actually being paid to present. So I will leave you with one of my famous expressions, and it's famous because I just said it's famous, but people who know me know it is. And it's simply this: show until they say no.
You've been listening to Retail Revisited. If our conversation today inspired you, please be sure to rate us on iTunes or share us with your friends. You can see a full list of all our episodes at thefriedmangroup.com. And for more information on how the Friedman Group can transform your business, you can contact us at sales@thefriedmangroup.com. A special thanks to Harry J. Friedman for sharing his 35 years of unbelievable experience for all of us to hear.